I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Thanks for joining us for this week's podcast for Dundee Museum of Transport. I'm joined today on the upper deck of the Routemaster double-decker bus by two members of the 749 Club. Welcome along, Neil and Ian.
Hello.
Okay, probably a good place to start is to let us know a little bit more about the 749 Club and what it's all about.
Well, the 749 Club, I think, started about 4 years ago. There's four of us in it, and we all have an interest in transport. I mean, two of the members actually work in the railways, so there's a transport interest there. But I think we've all had interest in buses and transport, and I think in the past, well, certainly I and one of the other members have thought about buying a bus and, you know, developing it. But actually, it's quite a difficult thing to do because you can't keep a bus outside your front gate. So you have to think about how you're going to manage, you know, looking after a bus. Anyway, we had the opportunity of buying one three and a half years ago.
It must be 2013.
Which was a single decker, which we acquired. And that sort of started the process going. And since then, we've acquired two double deckers, one of which we're sitting in just now.
Four of you in the club. Would it be helpful to have maybe people who, like-minded people with interest in buses and transport and things, that could maybe come in and help out with some of the works and things that you're doing?
Yes, I mean, and we do that. And there's a lot of stuff we can do ourselves, you know, the internal painting, but none of us are mechanics and none of us have expertise in buses. So when it comes to looking after these things, and they are, you know, serious pieces, particularly the Routemaster, quite complex pieces of machinery, we do need assistance because there's technical aspects of keeping these things in good condition that we need, you know, help with. If there are experts in, you know, running Routemasters out there, yes, please let us know. This bus in particular is quite a complex piece of machinery. You do need experts and people competent, because clearly these things are out in the road. And one of the things we do take very seriously is making sure that they are in, you know, good roadworthy condition. We get them looked at every 12 weeks, which we think is the responsible thing to do, to make sure that if we're out with them ourselves or we're taking people out on them, and we do that in certain conditions, certain circumstances, that these buses are in proper condition.
We are very fortunate because of our association with the museum that we have access, as it is, to a certain level of expertise, particularly, as Ian says, with this Routemaster, which really requires specialist treatment. We've been fortunate so far being able to obtain the necessary skills, but if there's anybody else out there, yes, then any assistance would be welcome, I'm sure.
Could you maybe in three words put a description, you know, to try and create a picture for those who are listening, just using three words that might best come to mind with something like that?
Three words.
Well, that's a tricky one. I mean, the Routemaster's been called the British design icon.
Yes.
Three words?
Yes.
And I think it probably is. I mean, if you ask someone about a bus, they'll probably say a big red London bus, which they may not know it's called a Routemaster, a big red London bus, because this is what people tend to identify with, I think, if they're talking about historic buses, which is one of the reasons we actually wanted one, because they are quite a showpiece. Yeah, I think that's probably the best way of describing it. It is one of the best designs, best in sort of transport designs probably there's ever been. I mean, this bus was built in 67 and was running until 2005.
And this was one of the last ones that the design was inaugurated in the 1950s. The first Routemasters were put into service in 1956, I think. And this one, they were still building them in the late 60s. I think this stopped with this design in early 1968. There were reasons for the design falling out of favour, which was to do with the government grants that were being made available for new buses. But they're very serviceable vehicles. But they are actually quite unusual. People will look at this and say it's like an ordinary half-cab bus of that type. But actually they're very different in many ways from the other type of bus, such as we have here as well.
The other buses, you said you have a single-decker bus as well as the two double-deckers. What can you share with us about the single-decker bus? Because it's a completely different concept to something like this.
It's a coach more than a bus. It was an early kind of express coach. It's a Bristol LS, and it dates from 1957. And it started its life down in the southwest of England. It was operated by Western National, and the branding used for it was the Royal Blue. It's got Royal Blue on the front of it. And the Royal Blue services were a kind of early express coach operation. It's quite a head-turner. People do like the Royal Blue coach. It seems to appeal to them when it's on display. Another thing to say, that the title of the 749 Club comes from the registration number of this first vehicle.
I was going to ask where that came from.
VDV 749. So that's why we chose that as the name of the club.
I was going to look at the significance of where the 749 came from.
It's more significant than registration plate of the first bus we had.
Okay, so a bus like this, obviously designed to carry people about. I believe last year, late autumn time, there was an occasion where the bus was involved in something to do with the trams. Can you maybe give me a bit more information about that?
Well, we were aware that 21st of October 2016 was the 60th anniversary of the closure of the Dundee tramway system, and we felt that the museum should do something to acknowledge this. So the plan was formed to have the museum use this Routemaster bus to undertake a tour of the old tramway system, stopping off at places of interest such as the old Termini. And what I did is I also produced a small informative historical document for people to look at as we went round, telling something about the history of the tramway system. So how many people do you think we had that?
I think we had about 50. It was a wide cross-section of people. It wasn't just, you know, older people remembering the trams. There were a lot of kids on the bus. And I think it went very well. There was a lot of interest. We stopped at various places to let people off, have a look at the various places that the tram stopped. And it was a good afternoon. I wondered how many people actually would be interested in doing that on a sort of rather cold October Sunday afternoon.
It was bright but cold.
There was a lot of interest. We could only allow about 50 people on the bus. I'm not sure how many more people we could have got. But it was certainly full to, you know, the amount of people we felt we could take. And I think it was a large, wide cross-section of people. I think it was quite a successful day.
Perhaps a good time to kind of link in between what we've been talking about with buses and trams, because I understand that the Transport Museum are to be having some talks and chats about the old trams in Dundee. Is that maybe something you can help us with, Neil?
I've been asked by the museum to give a talk on the 27th of April about the history of the trams. Now, I'm an amateur, I'm not a historian, I'm a railwayman, but I've been interested in the history of Dundee ever since I was a child, and I've been interested in the tramway system. Now, it closed down over 7 years before I was born. However, there are still enough people around who remember the cars, tram cars, and they remember them well. And, of course, Dundonians love old Dundee stuff. So what I want to do is present the history of the tramway system, focusing upon the aspects that people remember, but maybe bringing out some of the historical elements which people might not be so aware of. Very importantly, what we have here at the museum is the old horse car number 24, which was the last horse tram built for Dundee in 1897. It was hiding in a garden in Perth, acting as some kind of summer house. People knew it was there. It must have been there since between the wars, I think. But they thought it was a Perth tram. Nobody knew that a Dundee horse tram had survived, until somebody, I think, went and started scraping some of the paint off the exterior and found the identification of the Dundee and District Tramway Company, which was the private company that ran the system in those days. So great excitement, of course, and the museum managed to acquire this tram car for restoration, and it can be seen in the exhibition hall. There's that one. There are two other Dundee trams survived, both of which were steam car trailers, one of which is Car 21, which is down at Crieche in Derbyshire at the National Tramway Museum. The other one, part of it anyway, has been restored as the old tram kiosk at the end of the High Street and Commercial Street, and that's steam car trailer number two. So those are the three surviving Dundee tram cars. The early days of the tramway system is really quite interesting to look at, and I hope to bring some of that to life as well when I do the presentation in April.
And again, obviously, the link is further extended by the new home that will become the home for the Transport Museum at the tram depot up at Stocks Mill.
Merrifield, yes. Merrifield Depot was built in 1901 to house the new electric cars. The corporation took over the tramway system in 1899 and almost immediately set about modernising it and bringing in this then quite new technology of electrification. And these electric tram cars were the wonder of the age. And Merrifield Depot was constructed as one of the places where they were to be housed. And it was actually extended twice. Eventually it came to have a capacity of 70 trams, and it really was the principal tramway depot in the city. There was the garage in Lochie Road, and there was one out at Lochie as well. But Merrifield's always thought of as the main tramway depot. Quite an important historic building.
We are up at the Merrifield Tram Depot, which is going to be the new home of the museum in the next few years, standing in the middle of the most massive mammoth empty space that you could possibly think of. It's a bit echoey, you might notice that. I'm joined by two members from the museum. We've got Dean Hutton. Hi, Dean. How are you doing?
Hi there.
And, of course, Sam, manager.
Hi there again.
Okay, we are going to have a wee wander about, just to talk about some of the things that we can see as we are going through. And Dean and Sam will be able to talk me out. So, we're towards the back of the building at the moment. What can you tell us about this particular area at this time?
This was originally a stench, and this was added on after World War II, 1910. I think there was two extensions. The original one is near the front of the building, the second extension is added on near the back.
Looking about, it's just a massive, massive building. On the left, it seems to be a little bit of disappear. What can you tell us about that?
So at some point there was a smallish fire here, which has made that part of the building fire damaged, and you can see that when you look at aerial shots of the building. The actual main original building that was built in 1901 is still standing, albeit in need of a lot of repairs.
You know, do we know how many trams that used to be up here?
This originally held up to 80 buses and trams at the time.
What's quite nice about the tram depot is when you come in, you would have seen some of the original tram lines running through, and certainly at the front with the cobbled area, all the original tram lines are there as well, which just gives it a quite unique feel to the building and obviously makes it ideal for a museum of transport.
So this bit here, where we're now in, it looks like a big, it's like a concertina door. Do you think this is maybe where one part ended and another part started?
I think this, what we believe is that the front part, this is the original part that we're walking towards, and then so this part here, you've got this door, but you can also see the brickwork's quite different, and it was only a couple of weeks ago that Dean pointed that out to me, actually, that you could actually see from the brickwork that this would have been the extension. You can see the line where it was, so it's nice to be able to pick up on these little details and mark out you know, exactly where things were built and when.
We're now at the front of the tram depot, and I'm looking here at a kind of corner wooden office with a mezzanine above it. I don't know if you know any bit more about the history of what we're standing in front of at the moment.
The office block is meant to look like a tram car, what we believe. It was a changing room. The inspector's office was upstairs, what I've heard from a couple of corporation drivers who used to work in here.
So the top was for the inspectors so that they could see what was happening, and this bottom area was a changing facility.
And I think this is something that we would you know, like to retain if possible, because it's a big depot, and I guess although it has original features, there's not a lot of sort of little offices and things here. So because of the shape of it, and it's just quite an interesting part of the building, so ideally with the redevelopment, this is something that we'd like to retain. I didn't even realise it was in the shape of a tram. You know, you just kind of look at it and think of it as an office, but it definitely has that shape at the front and around the sides as well. So it's just a nice touch, you know, that they've added when they've put the building together.
So standing outside the old tram depot at Maryfield, standing here in front of the original tram lines, tram points and cobbled area, an area that's it's just takes you back in history. And this is maybe a good point where we should maybe ask for people who have memories and perhaps even photographs of this, Sam. Do you think it would be good if we could get a hold of some pictures of how it used to be when it was in working order?
Oh, definitely. And if anyone has any photographs of the tram depot from any point in its history, it would be great to see them. But we're also keen to hear from people who either lived in the local area or continue to live in the local area that have memories, you know, of the trams or the buses coming in and out of here or worked here. That would be also really great for the displays at the museum. So hopefully we'll hear from some people.
A big thanks to all our guests this week. We had Neil and Ian from the 749 Club and Dean and Sam up at the Maryfield Depot. Listen in again next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
For our next podcast.